Hello, friends. This is Fred Dominguez. One of the evidences for the inspiration of the Bible is the way in which it deals with its major characters. In a human production, the heroes would be presented as though they had no flaws. The villains would be presented as though they had no redeeming qualities. Every part of the story would be written so as to cast the good guys in as favorable a light as possible. The Bible, of course, is not like this. It portrays each person in a completely honest and frank manner. Thus, we not only read about Abraham's great faith, we also read about the times he lied about his wife Sarah in order to save his life. We read that David was a man after God's own heart, but we also read about his sin in the matter with Bathsheba and her husband Uriah the Hittite. Each person in the scriptures is presented just as he or she was, whether good or bad. Very few of those named in the scriptures escape without some observation that is critical of him or her. An example of one about whom nothing negative is written is Daniel. From start to finish, his record is universally good. There isn't even a single instance in which his actions are questionable, much less evil. As we continue our series today on 12 Extraordinary Women, we will take a look at the life of a woman about whom nothing negative is written. For a few moments then this morning, we're going to discuss the story of the woman whose name was Ruth. The events surrounding the life of Ruth took place near the end of the period of the Judges. Commentators believe that Ruth lived about 100 years before David. This was a chaotic period in the history of Israel. In Judges chapter 21 and verse 25, the scripture says, "In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes." For about 300 years, Israel had gone through cycles of rebellion against God, oppression from their enemies, and then deliverance and rest at the hands of a judge. The book of Ruth, chapter 1, verses 1 through 4, tells us that there was a man from Bethlehem named Elimelech who took his wife and two sons and went into the land of Moab to live due to a severe famine in Israel. Moab was situated on the east side of the Dead Sea in an area that was primarily grassland. This made it an ideal locale for pasturing flocks and herds. The Moabites were distant relations to the Israelites, being descended from the son born to Lot's oldest daughter by means of her incestuous union with her father. Even so, the relationship between Israel and Moab had not always been good. When Israel approached the Promised Land, they came into the plains of Moab on the east side of the Jordan River opposite Jericho. It was from this place that they would enter the Promised Land to conquer it. While Israel was encamped there, Balak, king of Moab, tried to bring curses upon Israel through the prophet Balaam. This is in Numbers chapters 22 through 24. It was also at this time that the Moabites enticed some of the Israelites to marry Moabite women and to worship the Moabite gods. You read about this in Numbers chapter 25. In response to this rebellion, God sent a plague that killed 24,000 among the Israelites. As early as Exodus chapter 34, verses 15 and 16, God had commanded Israel not to intermarry with the Canaanite people. Moses repeated this command in Deuteronomy 7, verses 1 to 4, and Joshua did the same in Joshua 23, verses 12 and 13. The Moabites were not expressly named in this prohibition, but the events of Numbers chapter 25 at Baal Peor indicate that the same danger was present among the Moabites as with the people of Canaan. That danger was that the Israelites would be led away from God into the worship of pagan gods of these peoples if they married with them. Now, the chief god of the Moabites was Chemosh, who was called the detestable idol of Moab in 1 Kings 11 and verse 7, and the abomination of Moab in 2 Kings 23 and verse 13. The worship to Chemosh included human sacrifice, in which children were burned to death on the altar of this god. Moabite worship, like that of many of the pagan cultures, also included sexual immorality. This is likely what occurred during the incident that is recorded in Numbers chapter 25. These things make us wonder why Elimelech then would ever take his family to Moab, much less let his sons marry Moabite women. Nevertheless, this is what he did, and surprisingly, there is no negative statement in the scriptures about either of these things. For reasons that are not specified in the scriptures, relations between Israel and Moab seem to have been good at this time. The Moabites seem to have no problem with Elimelech and his family living among them, and later the Israelites accepted Ruth without reservation. With this background in mind, we pick up the story of Ruth in the first chapter of the book that bears her name. In verses 1 to 4, we find that Elimelech, Naomi, and their two sons lived in Moab for 10 years. They came to Moab because of the famine in Israel and apparently stayed some time after the famine ended. It was probably near the end of this 10-year period that the sons married. We suggest this because when the father and sons died, there was still as yet no offspring from these unions. The deaths of Elimelech and his two sons left Naomi and her daughters-in-law in dire straits. Under the law of Moses, the elder son was responsible for the care of his widowed mother and any other dependent family members. Whether the Moabites had such a law is immaterial, because in this case, there were no male heirs in the family at all. Naomi, Orpah, and Ruth would have been relegated to begging in order to sustain themselves. At this time of distress, Naomi learned that the famine had ended in Israel and resolved to return to her homeland. Her intent was to leave her daughters-in-law in Moab, where they could return to their family's care until they could marry again. This made perfect sense, of course, even though there was genuine sorrow on both sides over this separation. It is here, however, that we begin to see what made Ruth an extraordinary woman. In verses 15 through 18, Ruth made a profound statement of loyalty to her mother-in-law. Her words have often been used as part of wedding ceremonies in order to declare a bride's devotion to her husband. Ruth's words indicate that she was not a typical Moabite. She said, "Do not urge me to leave you or turn back from following you. For where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. Thus may the Lord do to me and worse, if anything but death parts you and me." Whatever the moral condition of the Moabites as a people might have been, it is evident that neither of Naomi's daughters-in-laws were ungodly. What sets them apart from one another is that Orpah was willing to go back to her own people, while Ruth was not. Ruth, like Abraham many generations before, was willing to leave her family, her home, and nation in order to go to a place that she had never seen before. Ruth made the commitment to go with Naomi to care for her and to become whatever she needed to be in order to do so. In the remaining chapters of the book of Ruth, we see the three qualities that marked her character. First, she was absolutely loyal to her mother-in-law. Having made the commitment to stay with Naomi, Ruth did not waver for a moment. She traveled with Naomi back to Bethlehem, which was the hometown of Elimelech. Their arrival in Bethlehem caused a great stir in the city. Yet the stir seems to have been due more to the fact of Naomi's return than to Ruth's nationality. Even though she was in a foreign land, Ruth remained by Naomi's side all the way. Second, we see Ruth's great love for Naomi by her willingness to work hard to provide for her mother-in-law. In Ruth chapter 2, we read the account of how Ruth went out to the fields during the barley harvest in order to glean the fallen grain. This was a provision of the law of Moses, which gave the poor an opportunity to provide for themselves by gathering crops from the corners of the fields and from those crops that fell to the ground during the harvesting process. The kindness and generosity of Boaz is a central part of this story. But it is important to notice that Ruth was not a slacker. In Ruth chapter 2, verses 6 and 7, Boaz's servant reported that Ruth had labored in the fields from early in the morning until mealtime. Her work was so diligent as to have attracted the attention of Boaz's foreman, whose testimony to Boaz only confirmed what Boaz had heard about this young woman. After her hard day's labor, Ruth not only brought the fruit of her labors to her mother-in-law, she also brought her some of the meal that Boaz had provided for her during the day. Ruth continued to work in this manner all through the barley harvest and then through the wheat harvest. Ruth obviously loved Naomi, and her diligent work demonstrated that love each and every day. The third quality that made Ruth exceptional was her obedience, and this was demonstrated in two ways. First of all, she obeyed Boaz's instruction that she should stay close to his servants as they harvested. In other words, Boaz did not want her to go to anyone else's fields to glean. And Ruth did exactly as Boaz said through both the barley and the wheat harvests. But secondly, when Naomi gave Ruth instructions on how she should conduct herself at the threshing floor, she did everything Naomi told her to do. In Ruth chapter 3, verses 2 through 5, Naomi told Ruth to wash and anoint herself and to put on her best clothes. Then she was to watch and see where Boaz laid down for the night. When he was asleep, she was to uncover his feet and lie down at his feet. Ruth obeyed these instructions to the letter. When Boaz awakened and saw Ruth at his feet, he knew exactly what this meant. Ruth was placing herself in his care in order to become his wife. Not surprisingly, Boaz was willing to do what the law required in order to marry her. His testimony about Ruth explains why he was happy to marry her. In Ruth chapter 3 and verse 11, he said, "Now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you whatever you ask, for all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence." Ruth's reward for her loyalty, her love, and her obedience was twofold. First of all, she married a godly man whose wealth ensured that she and Naomi would be cared for the rest of their lives. But secondly, she became the great-grandmother of David and a key figure in the lineage of the Lord Jesus. She is one of only four women named in the genealogy of Jesus that we read in Matthew chapter 1. Ruth's legacy for us to learn from today is that she was a woman of excellence. I suspect that she was a beautiful woman, but her legacy is in the beauty of her inner person. This is what made her excellent in her time and extraordinary as well. When we think about the story of this wonderful woman from Old Testament history, we understand, we recognize that we need women like Ruth still today. We need women who uphold godly values in everything that they do and whose godly influence will reach through the generations to those as yet unborn, just as Ruth's was able to do beyond her own lifetime. Ruth was a wonderful example of a woman who devoted herself to God's will and did everything that was required of her in order to be an excellent and exceptional woman in her time. God bless women who followed the example of Ruth. Thanks very much for listening this morning. Please join us again next time for Let the Bible Speak.